Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Mike Canary. Joining me now is David Wolf. He's founder of a nonprofit company called Ocean Habitats that's creating and selling mini artificial reefs that are generally installed behind homes underneath docks. The basic idea is to create safe habitats for juvenile fish and crabs and other marine life to grow and thrive. His company has installed hundreds of these mini reefs on Marco Island and recently installed the first one behind a home in Fort Myers. David, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
This part of today's show is pre-taped, so we're not taking calls, but if you'd like to make a comment, you can find us on social media. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. If you have a question for David, just leave it there and we'll pass it along. Okay, for starters, can you just describe these mini reefs, just in simple terms? Describe them for our listeners who can't see them.
What they are is they're a 3 foot long, but 2 feet wide by 2 feet deep. It looks kind of like a parking structure, if you can imagine that. They're made out of polypropylene plastic, which is recyclable. And what they do is they mimic the environment of prop roots of mangrove trees. So they help set up that kind of environment underneath people's docks, where obviously the mangroves were removed decades ago during coastal development. So we're kind of using these units to get some of that life, back into the coastal areas that currently are canals.
Do they have to go under a dock? I mean, does somebody have to have a dock, or can they just kind of hang off a seawall?
They do have to go underneath the dock for permitting reasons.
Oh, okay.
It is possible to get them in open water, but we would actually have to go and seek permitting, probably city, county, and possibly state level, depending on where a person lives. Underneath the dock, it's already a permitted space that they're allowed to be in. So it's something akin to like how the state looks at a bait bucket.
Gotcha.
Not permanently attached to your dock.
Like a crab trap.
Yeah, it's not a navigation issue. It's not on the bottom, it floats. So as long as it's underneath the dock or a pier, some type of permitted structure like that, they're allowed to be in there.
And what's the installation process like? Is it pretty straightforward, just kind of fasten it to underneath the dock at the right depth, or how does that work?
What we do is delivery and installation is included with people's donations they make to us to receive the units. And we have a floating ring that goes around pilings. We connect, it connects to the unit in the corners of it. And we connect either 2, 3, or 4 pilings nearby, depending on how the dock has been constructed, because they're not all the same underneath. Different shapes are used. And it takes us about 5 minutes to put one in when we get there and get underneath the dock.
Hmm. One of the things that the information on your website says is how they clean water. Can you kind of describe how that works as far as the cleaning of the water? I understand the habitat part, but I wasn't clear on the water cleaning part.
Yeah, as far as how they clean water is back to that, the description of it being replicating what goes on in mangrove tree property environment. The way the structure is designed, filter feeders in the area, there are dozens and dozens of different species. We're talking about animals like oysters, mussels, sea squirts, a lot of other more complicated names we could go on to, but I won't do that. They attach to the structure itself, to the mini reef. They latch onto it when they're little tiny larvae, and they grow up on the unit. That's basically their home. And once those animals have reached partway through their growth cycle, and they're filtering water, and what they do is they pull in water both to breathe and also to strain out all the green phytoplankton, people would call algae, in the water. That's their food source. And then they expel clean seawater that no longer has any of those animals in it because the filter feeder itself has actually eaten them. And so that's how the unit actually filters and cleans water. It's the life, the biomass that's on the unit going through their daily activities of eating, basically.
Okay, yeah, that makes perfect sense. That's their filter feeding. I was thinking maybe there was some sort of mechanical filtration as well as habitat that came along with it.
We're giving Mother Nature a chance to just go do her thing in a place where it's hard for her to do it normally.
So what is your background, and how did this idea come about?
My background is I actually went to I'm from Southwest Florida there. I grew up and went to North High. I studied marine science at University of South Florida, graduated from there. While I was doing that, I worked for a foundation in Sanibel Island called the Marine Habitat Foundation. And we were working on kind of large structures to grow stone crabs, spiny lobsters, kind of commercially important and expensive seafood. I do kind of ocean ranching, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And we had, you know, the problem of all these filter feeders attaching to our big units, making them extremely heavy and also making them not as flexible. And therefore, we had something like a hurricane, you know, could be damaged or break up. We realized as we're working on it that this problem for what we were trying to do was actually a solution for a different problem, which is what goes on inside of man-made canals. So we kind of miniaturized and worked through a myriad of failures and problems that we came across that makes the units not work, and kind of found solutions to that, which, you know, led us to a basic design that is kind of the forerunner of what we're doing today.
How long between conception and, you know, dealing with all those prototypes did it take before you were, you know, you had a company?
Well, the actual work on this was in the late 90s.
Oh, okay.
While I was in college. And the foundation that I worked at actually ran out of money. It was a nonprofit, which often happens with nonprofits. And it closed down. It ceased to exist, and basically all the work stopped. I had met my wife working at the company. I got married. I went off to do real estate. Everybody else went off to do whatever they were going to go do. And the idea kind of sat. I wasn't happy in corporate life and was looking to get back to doing something that I wanted to do, what I went to, you know, school for. So after about 17 years selling my businesses, I came back and found out that essentially nothing had been done with all of the work we'd put into engineering this. Yeah, these units were probably about 90% of the way to what they are today, and the idea had just kind of sat. A few people had tried here and there to kind of revive it, but it just didn't go anywhere for one reason or another. So I decided, since, you know, I had been in charge of kind of construction and deployment of these and figuring out what was going on and perfecting them more, that I would get you know, back involved with this idea, because it's something that I spent, you know, quite a few years in college working on. And, you know, we kind of went through like another year's worth of prototyping just to kind of fine-tune a few issues that I saw as being a problem for the long-term lifespan of the units. And once we had, you know, those issues worked out about 2 years ago, when we started kind of actively letting the public know about what we're doing on Marco Island, because the city there was very supportive of our work. They wanted to see more fish and crabs and cleaner water in their waterways. So, you know, we started deploying there, and it's kind of slowly picked up month after month as more people, you know, find out about our work, and they're able to talk to people who have now had them for several years and hear the successes. You know, now the last probably 90 days around the state of Florida, it's really taken off. We're in 35 different coastal cities now, and we actually have units sitting in Miami waiting to ship over to the Bahamas. It'll be kind of our first international install. So it's been very long, very long time coming. You know, literally 20 years ago, the main idea for this was ready, but I kind of took a hiatus there for a bit until I came back around to it.
So how much do they cost? And I understand there's more than one model. Is just one just basically bigger than the other one?
Right, right. The mini reef, which is what we started off with, the cost is $250. That includes the delivery and installation. We are a nonprofit, so a portion of that is tax deductible. The larger mini reef plus is basically, it's twice the size. It's $450. Again, delivery and installation is included with that. And then we always ask after we do an installation if we can come back in the future to, you know, to film the light that's going on there, study what we've got, because, you know, not every location is the same. We have found some very interesting animals growing in some parts of the state that we're not supposed to be.
Oh, right.
You know, maybe they're only there temporarily, but, you know, we kind of try to keep track of the science still of, you know, what's happening, how do they develop over time, how do they change as the years go by, and it's something we're going to continue to do.
So how long has the first one been in the water, and how is it holding up?
The oldest one on Marco Island has been there for 4 years, and it's just like the day it was put in. You know, we had kind of, you know, through all that prototyping back in the 90s, we'd figured out there's a level of flexibility you need, also a level of rigidity. And if you get that right, and if you have the dimensions of the unit right, you know, it once it gets to kind of full capacity after, you know, 12 to 18 months of animals growing on it, basically, you know, performs the same year after year after year. The materials that it's made out of, actually will last hundreds of years in the water. And the structure itself is completely encased in life. So, you know, we had units that were left in Sanibel from back in the day when we were working on it. When I pulled them up off the bottom, they were just like, basically just like when we put them in. So they had been in the water for 18 years. Wow. And had no structural issues. So they're definitely going to be underneath someone's dock for a very long time. And then, like I mentioned before, if someone did want to remove them in the future for some reason, materials, most of the materials they're made out of, can actually be turned in to be recycled.
We've covered the issue of plastics in the water. So, yeah, I guess if you pick the right kind of plastic, it's not going to deteriorate. It's going to stick around in a good way
right. This
time, right?
Right. And actually, most of the plastics that we tested did not work. For one reason or another, animals couldn't attach to it, couldn't stay attached to it. I mean, there's different manufacturing techniques. You know, we found that there's actually very few materials that animals can get on right away. They'll hold up over time. You know, they can stand the saltwater environment. The sun rays that hit them. You know, things have to be UV stable. So, you know, that was part of the, you know, about 100 failures that we had was figuring out what would actually work long term. So I'm glad we finally figured it out. It was a lot of work.
So what kind of feedback have you gotten from customers? And, you know, it occurred to me as I was, you know, thinking about this. I have a fish tank that I've had going at my house for, you know, 20-something years. Is there a fish tank aspect to this, in a sense, that people can, like, see what's going on behind their house in a more intimate way than if they just had a dock?
Right. Well, the feedback that we've received has been all positive. You know, people... some of them, you know, were hesitant to put them in because they felt like, on Marco Island, there's some places where there's freshwater springs. It was a kind of a natural waterway that got turned into a canal. They didn't think maybe it'd work because there wasn't a salt. And there are, you know, some circumstances like that where it takes a unit a little bit longer to get going, than units that are in full salt water. But they're always, you know, they call me up and they can't believe that, you know, their canal where they've owned a house for 8 years, they had nothing but catfish. Now they're seeing, you know, all the kinds of fish that they read about that should be in the area, swimming around their dock. Some of them, you know, living under it. A lot of them just kind of visiting during the day, making their rounds, you know, looking for a meal. And you know, they're just really, really excited to, you know, to see that this piece of water they felt was just kind of dead behind their house and discouraged by could be turned into something where, you know, it becomes full of life and vibrant. Hear from a lot of people who have owned the house for, you know, 20 or 30 years, and they know what it used to be like, what they could catch off their dock when they first purchased the house, and they were still working up north and hadn't retired yet. And they're always excited to see, you know, all those types of fish back, you know, after, you know, 6 to 9 months of the unit working in there. They love watching their grandkids, you know, being able to catch a snook, which they hadn't seen on their dock in 15 years. And you know, now they're back because there's a reason for them to be around, because there's a little ecosystem, you know, growing under there.
Hmm.
So, yeah, that basically they call back, they're happy, and if they have room, they're usually ordering more to install because they want to have even more fish.
Hmm. You know, are you installing, I mean, not installing, are you building these yourself? What is your manufacturing process like, and are you ready, you know, are you going to be able to scale up if it does take off?
Yeah, so currently they are assembled by our volunteers and a couple employees. We are able to scale up whenever we get to that point, when we exceed the capabilities that we have. That's just a matter of purchasing some tooling that we've been testing out to at that point have machines produce either part or all of the unit. It's something that we will definitely be able to handle quite a bit more business than we currently do. The installation side of it is going to require, you know, definitely hiring more people around the state along the eastern seaboard, you know, as we expand to other states to handle installations just so they can be done rapidly. But that's something we have actually planned for and looking forward to, you know, having to implement those plans, you know, as more of these hit the water and we're doing more good for the environment in various areas.
So Ocean Habitats, Inc. is nonprofit. Can you explain your mindset behind making it a nonprofit?
Well, the whole point of this was to try to do good for the environment. You know, I grew up in Southwest Florida. You know, I remember what it was like to, you know, swim in clearer waters, to catch fish, you know, anytime I went out. You know, I can remember as a kid going out with my uncles, you know, filling a boat in an hour and a half to come in for a family reunion that we were all having at Cape Coral and be able to cook fish all day and feed everybody. And he just can't do that anymore. And I want to, I wanted to make some positive steps towards getting us back to that kind of state. Being a nonprofit was just, this is the work we're doing. It's important to me. This isn't about trying to make millions of dollars. I would go back to my real estate career if I wanted to make a lot of money. This is just something important to me, trying to make a positive change for the environment. I have four children, born here in Southwest Florida. I want them, or my grandchildren to come someday, to be able to have a chance to enjoy, the beauty that our coastal waters still have, and try to get us back to what we used to have, or at least as close to as we can. So that's kind of why we went the nonprofit route. This is about making a positive impact, not making money.
Hmm. We've covered the many issues facing offshore reefs and corals on this show, different diseases and coral bleaching and things like that. Is there any way that this could be scaled up to become an offshore thing? You'd mentioned right now it has to be under a dock because of permitting reasons, but have you thought larger scale offshore?
Well, we do still have the original aquaculture kind of ocean ranching designs. I have actually run into some people who are leaving Gainesville, Florida. They finished their doctorate work in fish production, and they are interested down in the Florida Keys. They have some aquaculture leases from the state down there. They're interested in setting some of these up as rafting units in the bayside of the islands there to start mass producing sea life to try to restore kind of the declining, diminishing stocks that we have. So they're looking at doing scallops, and they're looking at doing spiny lobster and stone crabs and blue crabs, and kind of, I guess, going through a little test phase to see how well our units do deploy for them. Anywhere where we could get that type of large scale unit where it does have some protection, like a barrier island, something like that, from the full force of a hurricane, it's going to be okay operating. They definitely would not be able to just be hanging out like in the open Gulf of Mexico. When there's something like a hurricane, that would be too much for them to handle.
Gotcha. All right. Well, that is all the time we have for this part of today's show. Thanks to my guest, David Wolf, is founder of Ocean Habitats, Inc. David, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate you having us on. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you.
No problem. Our show today was produced by Julie Glenn and myself. Our director is Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Rachel Iacovone today. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Mike Canary. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM. We are NPR for Southwest Florida.